Hey friends, it's James Steensma, and this is episode 7 of The Art of Letting Go. I want to call this a special episode because it's less about the art of letting go and more about the art of letting in. I want to introduce you to the people who every day for the last 30 plus years have affected my life in a positive way. My very best friends and the people that I love most dearly. So let's do that for the next half hour and enjoy our time together on The Art of Letting Go. I listen to a lot of music, like a lot of music from all different genres. And typically when I'm listening to music, what I'm listening for is the lyrical content. The music is fine. I can tolerate just about anything when it comes to the actual production. But I'm listening for lyrics because, as I shared in the last episode, I enjoy poetry. I enjoy producing poetry, but I love to hear it, especially in song. There was a great song that came out a couple of years ago, lyrically speaking, especially, from an artist named Ben Rector. And the song's called Old Friends. The chorus goes like this. Can you take me back to when we were just kids who weren't scared of getting older? Because no one knows you like they know you, and no one probably ever will. You can grow up, make new ones, but the truth is there's nothing like old friends because you can't make old friends. I love that lyric. I love the sentiment behind it because when I heard it, I immediately went to what those would be called old friends. But I also thought about that line that says you can grow up and make new ones because I've been blessed with an awful lot of those. So I wanted to take a little bit of time and introduce some of those people to you and how they have helped shape and mold me and help me in my own skill and in the art of letting go. Let's do that on the other side. I really am the luckiest person alive. I believe that. Some days I believe it a little bit less than others. Don't get me wrong. The bones creak a little more. Sometimes I would like to stay in bed a little longer and not care if I'm lucky or not. But I really am, because through this amazing, twisted life that I've had, I have some of the longest relationships that a friend could ever ask for. I remember my very first distinct memory of being a friend or having a friend. I was 5 years old. I kid you not. 1976. Well, I know it's hard to believe I was alive then, especially how good I look. But I was. And in 1976, I had two friends in particular, Chuck Millage and Jason Messman. And those guys were my best friends through roughly fourth grade. In fact, in third grade, we started what we called the President's Club. And the cost of admission to the club was the 50-cent JFK piece. Not the George Washington quarter or the FDR dime. No. JFK. And we would study presidential history, the first ladies. There was a great collection of cards you can get from Kellogg boxes back in the 70s. So we did all of that together. But then we moved. My family and I, my brothers and I, moved to Decatur with our mom and her newer husband, our then stepdad, who adopted us after we moved to Decatur. Our birth name was Bates, and we ended up with the much easier to pronounce and spell name of Steensma. But we moved to Decatur, and my best friends at that time, really almost by default, were my brothers, Chip and Joe. And even to this day, even though we went through these episodes in high school where we acted like we didn't really care a whole lot about each other, we always had each other's back. But all three of us were in high school together. And our sister Michelle was a year ahead of Chip. And for a while there, we had three Steensmas in the same high school for several years. And as my brothers and I especially have grown up together, and especially since the time when I started to get very sick in my 20s, never a conversation goes by where we don't tell each other that we love each other. And never a conversation goes by where we don't actually try to engage each other in what's going on in our lives. We tell jokes and we tell superficial stories, but at the end of the day, what matters is the deep love we have as brothers, but also as friends. But beyond that, it took a while for me to kind of find my friend group, if you will. I mean, I had a couple of elementary friends. I remember John Matthews and Doug Trout, to call out a couple of guys that I really enjoyed hanging out with. But it wasn't until high school that I really started to develop the friendships that statistically should not have lasted beyond high school, but through hard work and determination, that sounded like my parents right there, but through hard work and determination, those friendships have become lifelong. And you know what's very interesting about relationships as I see them on Facebook from people I graduated high school with? It seems as though those high school relationships continued on until now. So maybe for my age of student back in that day and adult now, that was something that we really clung to, was creating these lifelong relationships. I'd like to believe that's true. Statistically, I know it's not. But my very first friend in high school was actually a guy I knew in middle school. And we ran around in the same, if you will, dynamic circle. We vied for the same musical parts and the like. But we didn't really know each other, nor did we really like each other. I honestly, I'm sure he called me names, but I called him Fatty Matty. And I'm sure I only did that out of retaliation because I was an innocent child then. Nonetheless, Matt, when we became freshmen, he and I found not only did we actually enjoy spending time together in school, but our relationship grew to this incredible, to this day, this incredible, deep, meaningful relationship. Matt is one of the only people who probably knows the real me. Like, there are friends who are excellent friends, that are great friends, but we would never share everything with, right? They're situational friends, if you would. Matt's not that. Matt knows the real me. And I believe I know the real Matt. We talk about what's on each other's hearts and minds. We talk about real problems. But he's also the friend that I don't need to worry if I don't talk to him for 3 weeks or 4 weeks or a month or two or three. Because we always pick it right back up where we left it off. And we do apologize to one another. It's sincere to always say, man, I wish that I had more time to spend with you. You know, we live 20 some odd miles apart, and I see him less than the friends who live an hour and a half away. True. Why is that? Because we don't need it. We want it, but we don't need it. And there's a critical definition there. It's defined that way. We never set it up that way. But once we started to fall into that habit, we realized that's okay for our relationship. Day to day is not necessary in physicality, emotionally, spiritually, mentally. We're in each other's lives every day. To this day, Matt continues to be the best of a friend that a person can ask for. And I had other friends in high school, my buddy Matt Schatz, and I have reconnected over the last few years. And again, I enjoy the amount of time we spend together. One of my other very first friends, his name was Chris Geimer. And Chris and I, he's probably who I spent the most time with in high school, quite frankly. Seemed as though no matter what, I found myself out near his house every Friday or Saturday. I loved the time that I spent with him. As we became seniors, Chris had this other awesome group of friends who remotely were friends of mine. I didn't really spend time with them, but he did. And so as a result, we spent less time together our senior years and then into our freshman year in college. And after that, outside of weddings, we didn't really spend a whole lot of time together up until about 5 years ago. 5 years ago, his father became ill with liver diseases and ultimately passed away. And I visited Chris at the funeral home. And of course, there's always been love there. There's never been a moment where we didn't always consider the love we have for each other. But especially knowing that his father had passed away just 2 weeks before my own liver transplant, I think redefined our relationship. Chris visited with me during my own rehab as a liver patient. And to this day, we still get together, not as often as you might think, but much more often than we did over a 20-year gap. So it's a true blessing to have Chris back in my life. And I truly believe that since he is, that the other friends that we used to hang out with will also continue to have a relationship with Chris in the future. There was this kid who I met my senior year, and it was the first day of my senior year. And he tells a slightly different story. His is boring. It's not exciting at all, and I'm sure it's not even true. But my side of the story was awesome and exciting. And that's that we were both running late to Carolyn Jackson's class, Grammar Review and Research Writing. And it's my contention that we literally ran into each other as we were running towards her class late, first period, senior year. And as we're, you know, gathering our materials from the floor and the mass casualty that happened in the process, we introduced ourselves. I said, "Hey, I'm James." He said, "Hey, I'm Scott." And that from that moment on, Scott and I have not gone more than probably 2 days without speaking. Rarely ever has there been a moment over the last 31 years that Scott Lovelace has not been in my life. So much so that our friendship took on a different, completely different relationship 10 years ago. My wife and I had set him up on a blind date, even though they knew each other by name, with her sister, with Maggie's sister, Casey. And the dinner started out with the two of them on opposite sides of the bench, sharing, you know, a nice casual conversation. And by dessert, they were basically sitting in each other's lap, ordering each other's desserts. If ever there was the idea of instant true love, I think they encompassed that idea. Because the very next day, we went to Matt's 40th birthday party. And at that party, Matt's mom asked us how long they had been together. And we laughed because we said, "They're not together." And then we all took group photos later, and you would have thought that they had been together for a very long time. Well, I would contend they were planning their engagement that very next day, because they did end up eloping 5 months later to Hawaii. In fact, Matt, as an ordained minister, did their service. It was beautiful. But, you know, who didn't get an invitation to that wedding? Yeah. The two people who set them up to begin with. But I'm not saying I'm salty. I'm saying I'm over it. Maybe. Maybe not. I mean, it's Hawaii. But now Scott is my brother-in-law, and we don't just talk about friendship. We don't just talk about those things that bound us together for 20 years before he became my brother-in-law. We have incredible conversations about the needs of our families. And his children are my nephews. And my children are his nephews. Not because we always said that, but because there is now a true legal meaning behind those words. And it's wonderful. My other brother-in-law, Chuck, Maggie and Casey's sister, I've watched him grow up from the age of 14 to now in his early 30s, and watched as he's progressed from, as most teens are, somewhat lost, into this godly man who's raising a godly family, who's a loving husband and a committed son, committed brother, committed brother-in-law. I love him deeply. He's, again, one of my dearest friends. I had this other special friend in high school, and it's difficult to talk about him. His name was Bill. Bill and I met when I was a freshman. He was a sophomore. In fact, to be fair, he knew my younger brother first. And in a way, was friends with my younger brother before he was friends with me. But Bill and I, over time, started to find that we had common interests in just about everything. Plus, he had a car. And, you know, I'm willing to be friends with anybody who'll drive me anywhere. But Bill did. Bill lived out in the boonies and would drive in because I wanted to hang out. And the beauty was, he wanted to hang out. Bill passed away last year after a friendship of 34 years. We lost him very unexpectedly. And I'll likely bring up some of that in future episodes. But for the sake of keeping this a little lighter, I won't discuss too much about the loss. I will say that as I record this in my music den and studio, I am sitting in the chair that Bill would occupy every week. He would come over the last many years and decades, and we would play cards. We would tell one-liner jokes to each other. We'd listen to old Casey Kasem episodes. And we would share about the true concerns on our hearts. And we never had to worry about faking it. There was nothing fake about our relationship. And after Bill passed away, I did not come in this room. I did not come into my own music room for almost 9 months. It hurt too much to walk in here. But then I felt the presence of Bill in one particular evening, and I felt as though it was a letting go, that my anger subsided and I could deal more correctly with the grief of losing my dearest friend. Here's the beautiful thing about Bill Killen, was that he had a lot of people like that. At his funeral, to hear all of these people say that they were his best friend did not surprise me, because it wasn't a jealous type of friendship. I would expect him to have many best friends. But at the end of the day, we often would land softly on each other, and we could message each other and know that there was safety in it. There was a time that Bill and I basically had to divorce. And I read a wonderful article years ago, and that's why I say the word divorce, that said coming to the end of a friendship was sometimes harder than an actual divorce. It just so happened that he and I were both going through an actual divorce at the time. And so we found each other almost unbearable. Our lives seemed to be taking a different direction. But God wasn't done with us as friends and put us directly back into each other's paths about 18 months later. And from that moment in the early 2000s up until his passing last year, we did not go a single week without spending several hours together. And whereas with Matt, my relationship was different in the context that I didn't need to see him often, with Bill, I did. And that was perfectly fine by us. To go more than a week actually caused a little bit of nervousness, because that meant something was probably up that one of us needed to discuss with the other. And that's not something I had with other friends. In Bill's passing, it has taught me the importance of telling friends how much I love them. And my friends certainly do know how much I love them. Again, I try to express those ideals on a very regular basis. And in return, they do for me too. Over the last 10, 15 years, not like these guys were all 30-year plus friends, but over the last 10 to 15 years, I've been blessed with these incredible friendships from all walks of life. I've got three friends from my latter years in college. I call them the girls because when we text, I stereotypically like to say they're texting like girls. And that's my buddy Dave, who's a realtor, my buddy Rod, who is in manufacturing, but also a farmer, and my buddy Riley, who is a mortician. And the four of us, we can get together once or twice a year and have like communion, if you will, this breaking of bread where we're all sharing things going on in our lives, and we can walk away knowing that we loved hard in that time, and we don't need to communicate the way that maybe Bill and I would need to. And it's beautiful and it's wonderful, and they are true friends, not just passing acquaintances. I had a student of mine when he was a senior. He came up to me near the end of his high school career, and he said, you know what I want to do when I graduate? And I'm like, what's that? And he says, I want to smoke a cigar with you. And I don't know if I had had that conversation with them. I probably did, because again, I'm an oversharer, that I enjoyed a good cigar when I was 18. And so I said to Trace, Houston is his last name, that if it was okay with everybody from administration to his parents, I would be happy to do that. And it was. And so we shared that cigar. And from that moment, we shared it with another of his friends. But from that moment, he and I have had a real bonding. And here's the beauty in that. Whereas he said that he would like to pursue a friendship with me after he graduated from high school, I did exactly that same thing with my old English and theater teacher, Tom Kao. Tom is 83 years old and is one of my very closest friends. I see him regularly. We talk often. And we make sure that each other understands the power of love in our relationship. And it's beyond beautiful to say that not only do I have teachers as friends, but my teacher as a friend. And that wonderfully, I too can be the friend of a former student. My other friends that are teachers, we kind of bond over what I like to call math club. It's really a poker club, okay? I want you to know that because, again, I'm oversharing right now. But it gives us a way to be able to talk about playing poker in code. It's almost like passing notes about girls back in high school. So we'll say, okay, we need to have math club. And it makes us sound geeky and fun or not fun. But in that club are my friends Andrew and Tony, or as I call him, Hair Bear. My friends Brent and Sean, and two of my newer closest friends, Ben, who is not just a friend, but one of the few people in my life who challenges me to see things from completely different perspectives. Completely different perspectives. And it's my belief that why that is because he is much younger than me, but his worldview is much broader than mine. And I love that. I love that he challenges me. We also happen to go to concerts together, which is quite fun. But in that friendship, it's again, it's not a passing, fleeting thing. It's designed specifically to lay down challenges, to accept challenges, and to understand the grace that comes with varying and different opinions. And Ben's relationship with me is certainly that. And then there's my buddy Reed. Reed and I met at a wedding reception many, many years ago. And it was one of those things where I probably looked like a lost puppy. And my wife said, go talk to that guy. He's Reed and he's the spouse of another teacher. So, you know, I sheepishly probably walked over and said, hey, I'm James. We're supposed to hang out tonight. And from that moment on, well over a decade ago, he and I are continue to be very, very close. We've walked through life changes together. My surgeries, he would come and help me here at the house. Reed is a contrarian. He likes to argue for the sake of arguing. Do you know people like that? It like pisses me off, right? But I love his arguments because he's doing it out of love. He's doing it out of wanting to have a genuine conversation about what's going on in the world. But when we're one-on-one, when it's just Reed and I, we have this deep connection that allows for us to be able to share with one another about the pains going on in each other's lives. And we don't have to put on airs. There's no public show to be given. And sometimes even inside our own club, our own little group, we have a tendency to do that. He talks deeply about his faith with me. We both talk deeply about our family and our pride for our children and where they are in their lives. We talk about our love for education. These personal conversations that can only happen when we remove the filter of society. You know, I've got such a wonderful life of these friends. You'll notice that these are all guys. But I would be very remiss to not include two of my female friends. And honestly, my wife is my best friend. I will jokingly say to her that we're not allowed to be best friends since we're married. But I think good husband relationships with their spouses, their wives, allows for that friendship to exist, to grow, along with trust. And in that trust, I've been able to develop two very wonderful relationships with a couple of people. One was a co-teacher of mine, and she's a beautiful poet, an incredible writer. She has love for the human condition, and only wants good in people's lives. That's my buddy Leah. But the other, her name is Paige, and Paige Frisch is her name. And she, along with Matt, were the two people who encouraged me to start this podcast. When Paige and I would talk, she would say, you need to write your story. We would talk another time and she'd say, wow, you need to write your story. We'd talk another time and she'd say, you know what you need to do? You need to write your story. In fact, in the very first episode, I shared a line that later I realized was the very line that Paige said to me. And that's that everybody has a story. And I believe that to be true. I could tell you stories about all of these friends, every single one of them, and how they have impacted my life. From the very earliest friends and memories with Jason and Chuck, all the way through the newer friendships in my life and the passing of my dearest friend, Bill. Every person in every relationship, in every conversation, in every moment, it was a celebration of life. Every single one of these people have put their profound mark on my life. And I am all the better for it. So in my letting in, each one of these people has helped me to let go of some pain in my life, whether it was because of a personal conversation or a communal experience. I've never walked alone. And thank God for that. How lucky am I to have these friendships and relationships? I'll share more about some of these folks as we go, particularly Bill. I'm not over his grief. I need to find ways to stop being angry at him. But what helps in that process is having these loving friends that along the way have shown me what grace and mercy look like, what it feels like. Tomorrow, or even today, when you hear this episode, think about that one person who maybe in your own life needs a little grace and mercy. Remember, grace is what we get when we least expect it. Mercy is what we get when we least deserve it. Do you have somebody in your life who fits that bill? Maybe today is that moment when you thank them for the role they've played in your life. And what a wonderful gift it would be to continue having those relationships. Where we don't just let go of the past and let go of the pain and let go of the hurt, but we let in the love. We let in the joy. That's my challenge to you, friends. And in return, I want you to continue to challenge me to do the same. Until next time, here on The Art of Letting Go, I'm James Steensma. Hey friends, it's James. So my friend Bill passed away from kidney disease, among other things. He had lived his adult life with kidney disease, which required a kidney transplant. And at the time of his passing, he was waiting for another transplant. But the folks at the National Kidney Foundation really helped educate me in kidney diseases, especially the conditions that Bill struggled with. I would encourage you to take the time to stop by kidney.org and look at all of the incredible information that this organization has set out for you and me to absorb. And then you know what? You can actually say you learned something today. Also, friends, remember the struggles that so many of us go through this time of year. We like to put on our mask and hide it away from people. That's not always a healthy thing to do, especially during the holidays. If you're struggling with anxiety or depression, seasonal blues, or addiction, pick up your phone and text 741-741. 741-741. That's the crisis text line. And let them help you understand your value and worth every single moment during this holiday season and beyond. Thanks again for joining me. I'm James Steensma, and this is The Art of Letting Go.